From the stage of America's first Elizabethan theater, the Oregon Shakespearean Festival. Once again, the National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present direct from the outdoor stage in Ashland, Southern Oregon, the Oregon Shakespearean Festival Company, in scenes from Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. Now to tell you about the festival and its setting, here is Jennings Pierce.
Thank you, Bud Beechwood. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Joining me in this brief description of the festival and its program are Angus Bomer, the festival's founder and producing director, and Dr. Marjorie Bailey of Stanford University, the festival's academic advisor. This unique event, devoted to Shakespeare's plays and, beginning this year, Elizabethan music, is in its 12th season in this beautiful little town tucked in between the Siskiyou and Cascade Mountains in the Rogue River Valley. Here, Shakespeare's plays are produced as they were given in his own day on a stage built to the measurements of his own theater. The directors and sponsors of this civic event like to think that he would be pleased with it were he alive today. What do you think, Angus Bomer?
Well, I think so, Jennings. But not because our theater was established to do him homage, because it wasn't. We think he'd be pleased because here his plays do what he wrote them to do, entertain people.
But the festival certainly has scholarly appeal, too. Wouldn't you agree, Dr. Bailey?
Oh, I'm sure of that. Appeal for both the true scholars and the undertakers.
The undertakers?
Yes. Those people who think they are studying Shakespeare when they are merely rattling his bones in a classroom.
Yes. The type that treats the plays only as texts or as a mass of poetry with a few entrances and exits thrown into it.
Your true Shakespeare scholar, you know, remembers that he's dealing with a man who served the living art, and he wants to serve it too. Unless you see Shakespeare's plays in vivid action, you can't know all he has to say to you. Now think of the battle scenes in Julius Caesar. What do they mean on a printed page?
I have to admit that for me, they get to be confusion worse confounded.
On this open stage, you see the relation between the fighting and the minds of the Romans who directed it. It's a means of showing character in development or collapse. It's not just poetic pageantry.
The same in Henry V, too, isn't it? Pity we don't see that play oftener. I certainly enjoyed this year's production.
It's virtually impossible to present it on a modern stage, Jennings. Too many interruptions for curtain closings and shifts of scenery.
The freedom of the Elizabethan theater rushes the tremendous action ahead in close-knit sequences, just as Shakespeare wrote it. The story unrolls in rapid, continuous activity before your eyes.
That's
as if it were happening for the first time.
That's what the critics mean when they say the first requirement of a play is action.
That's it. A man by the name of Aristotle noticed that fact some thousands of years ago.
The thing that amazes me is the way we can follow the action and know where it's supposed to be going without any scenery.
Why? We just think we need scenery and properties. The player's lines tell you whether the space is a tent or a forest or a tavern or a prison. You stop worrying about it.
Well, the marvel is that Shakespeare juggles with more than the one variety of place. He had to think in several dimensions. To keep his audience keyed up, for instance, the battles have to alternate with scenes of tense personal emotion.
Well, is that true only of the history plays?
True of them all, I think, though in different terms.
Yes. Now, take the other plays this season. In Much Ado About Nothing and The Tempest, there's variation between large scenes of ceremony or gaiety or magic show and close-pointed scenes involving two or three people only.
That's right, sure enough.
That's the mechanical reason why the dramatist and the actor on a stage such as ours, with many levels and playing areas, can hold an audience for 2 hours without an intermission.
And the other reasons, Angus, are summed up in mighty good acting. You are certainly to be congratulated for the talented people you have here this year.
They get better every year and come from more distant points. New York, Chicago, Florida, Connecticut, Texas.
All points of the compass represented. That's good.
And not in the States alone. This year we have an actor hailing from Brazil.
Most of them come at their own expense, don't they, Angus?
Yes. We have a few scholarships, but only a few, and they are limited to room and board.
Then the actors find the experience worth any difficulties they may face.
It's experience that they can't find elsewhere. This is the only established theater in America where they can play Shakespeare on an Elizabethan stage in repertory. Even England has nothing so thorough to offer.
Is there a possibility that the new Elizabethan music program will develop in the same way?
We hope so, Jennings. We have an excellent director in Professor Hans Lampel of the University of Southern California. And in this one brief summer, his musical groups have accomplished splendid things.
And Dr. Bailey demands authentic Elizabethan music from first to last, I'll wager.
Oh, no, sir. The academic director is not so pedantic as all that. The range of the old music still extant, you know, wouldn't satisfy a modern audience. Renaissance airs are used for most of the songs and the dances. But for marches, anything of that kind, Professor Lample has had to make adaptations of the old themes. And good adaptations. And the performance of them. It's a triumph for his musicians.
Most of them are local people from Ashland and Medford and other nearby towns. It's amazing to find how much musical talent we have right here at home. Of course, this festival was built and is still run by local people, businessmen and housewives. It's good to see new opportunities springing up every year to keep us all working together.
It's a real monument to community spirit and enterprise, Angus. My very best thanks to you and Dr. Bailey for giving our listening audience an idea of the festival's workings and the meanings behind them. But let's introduce the actors of the season. And in Shakespeare's words, have a taste of your quality. I present them to you, ladies and gentlemen, in scenes from Julius Caesar. Here, as your narrator, is Richard Graham of the Festival Company.
Julius Caesar is one of the most popular, as it is also one of the noblest of Shakespeare's plays. It has been produced successfully in every period of theater since it was first presented in London, late in the 16th century. The first part of the play is concerned with the successful attempt of the conspirators, some political idealists and others selfish politicians, to draw the high-minded Brutus into the plot to destroy the sick, aging dictator who had been his friend. Then we see the assassination of Caesar and the beginnings of civil war in the mob response to the famous addresses of Brutus and Mark Antony. The Oregon Shakespearean Festival Company presents to you a radio adaptation of these two dramatic scenes. Now, Caesar, surrounded by the conspirators, is approached before the Capitol in Rome by the soothsayer, who has already warned him to beware the Ides of March.
The Ides of March are come.
Aye, Caesar, but not gone.
Hail, Caesar! Caesar, read this schedule.
Trebonius doth desire you to all read at your best leisure this, his humble suit.
Oh, Caesar, read mine first, for mine the suit that touches Caesar nearer. Read it, great Caesar.
What touches us ourselves shall be lost, sir.
Delay not, Caesar, read it instantly.
What is the fellow mad?
Caesar, give place.
What, I do your petitions in the street. Come to the Capitol.
Task could be sudden, for we fear prevention. Brutus, what shall be done? If this be known, Cassius or Caesar never shall turn back, for I will slay myself.
Cassius, be constant. Popilius Lena speaks not of our purposes, for look, he smiles, and Caesar doth not change.
Trebonius knows his time, for look you, Brutus, he draws Mark Antony out of the way.
Where is Metellus Cimber? Let him go and presently prefer his suit to Caesar.
He is addressed. Press near and second him.
Casca, you are the first that rears your hand.
Are we all ready?
What is now amiss that Caesar and his Senate must redress?
Oh, Caesar!
Hence wilt thou lift up Olympus!
Great Caesar!
Doth not Brutus bootless knee you?
Speak hands for me!
Oh! It too, Brute! Then fall, Caesar! Caesar!
Liberty! Freedom! Tyranny is dead! Let hence cry, proclaim it about the street!
Come to the common pulpit and cry out, liberty, freedom, and enfranchisement!
People and senators, be not afraid! Fly not, stand still. Ambition's debt is paid.
Where is Antony?
Fled to his house amazed. Men, wives, and children stare, cry out and run as if it were doomsday.
Fates, we will know your pleasures. That we shall die, we know. Tis but the time and drawing days out that men stand upon.
Why, he that cuts off 20 years of life cuts off so many years of fearing death.
Grant that, and then is death a benefit. So are we Caesar's friends that have abridged his time of fearing death. Stoop, Romans. Stoop and let us bathe our hands in Caesar's blood up to the elbows and besmear our swords. Then walk we forth even to the marketplace. And waving our red weapons o'er our heads, let's all cry peace, freedom, and liberty. Soft, who comes here, a friend of Antony's?
Thus Brutus did my master bid me kneel. Thus did Mark Antony bid me fall down, and being prostrate, thus he bade me say, Brutus is noble, wise, valiant, and honest. Caesar was mighty, bold, royal, and loving. Say I love Brutus, and I honor him. Say I feared Caesar, honored him, and loved him. If Brutus will vouchsafe that Antony may safely come to him, and be resolved how Caesar hath deserved to lie in death, Mark Antony shall not love Caesar dead so well as Brutus living, but will follow the fortunes and affairs of noble Brutus through the hazards of this untrod state with all true faith. So says my master Antony.
Thy master is a wise and valiant Roman. I never thought him worse. Tell him, so please him come unto this place, he shall be satisfied, and by my honor depart untouched.
I'll fetch him presently.
I know that we shall have him well to friend.
I wish we may, but yet have I a mind that fears him much, and my misgiving still falls shrewdly to the purpose.
But here comes Antony.
Welcome, Mark Antony.
Oh, mighty Caesar, dost thou lie so low? Are all thy conquests, glories, triumphs, spoils shrunk to this little measure? Fare thee well.
I know not, gentlemen, what you intend. Who else must be let blood? Who else is rank? If I myself, there is no hour so fit as Caesar's death hour, nor no instrument of half that worth as those your swords made rich by the most noble blood of all this world. I do beseech ye, if you bear me hard, now while your purpled hands do reek and smoke, fulfill your pleasure. Live a 1,000 years, I shall not find myself so apt to die. No place shall please me so, no mean of death as here, by Caesar and by you cut off. The choice and master spirits of this age.
Oh, Antony, beg not your death of us. Though now we must appear bloody and cruel, as by our hands and this our present act you see we do, yet see you but our hands, and this the bleeding business they have done. Our hearts you see not. They are pitiful, and pity to the general wrong of Rome. As fire drives out fire, so pity hath done this deed on Caesar. For your part, do you our swords have leaden points, Mark Antony? Our arms no strength of malice, and our hearts of brother's temper do receive you in with all kind love, good thoughts, and reverence.
Your voice shall be as strong as any man's in the disposing of new dignities.
Only be patient till we have appeased the multitude beside themselves with fear, and then we will deliver you the cause why I that did love Caesar when I struck him have thus proceeded.
I doubt not your wisdom. Let each man render me his bloody hand.
Mark Antony, here, take you Caesar's body. You shall not, in your funeral speech, blame us, but speak all good you can devise of Caesar, and say you do it by our permission. Else shall you not have any hand at all about his funeral. And you shall speak in the same pulpit whereto I am going after my speech is ended.
Be it so, I do desire no more.
Prepare the body then, and follow us.
Oh, pardon me, thou bleeding piece of earth, that I am meek and gentle with these butchers. Thou art the ruins of the noblest man that ever lived in the tides of time. Woe to the hand that shed this costly blood. Over thy wound, now do I prophesy, which like dumb mouths do ope their ruby lips to beg the voice and utterance of my tongue. A curse shall light upon the limbs of men. Domestic fury and fierce civil strife shall cumber all the parts of Italy. Blood and destruction shall be so in use, and dreadful objects so familiar, that mothers shall but smile when they behold their infants quartered with the hands of war. All pity choked with custom of fell deeds, and Caesar's spirit, ranging for revenge, with Otte by his side, come hot from hell, shall in these confines with a monarch's voice cry havoc, and let slip the dogs of war, that this foul deed shall smell above the earth with carrion men groaning for burial.
Cassius, go you into the other street and part the numbers.
Those who will hear me speak, let him stay here. Those who will follow Cassius, go with him. and public reason shall be rendered of Caesar's death.
I will hear Brutus speak.
I will hear Cassius and compare their reasons when severally we hear them rendered.
Noble Brutus is ascended. Silence!
Be patient till the last. Romans, countrymen, and lovers, hear me for my cause and be silent that you may hear. And have respect to mine honor that you may believe. Censure me in your wisdom. And awake your senses that you may the better judge. If there be any in this assembly, any dear friend of Caesar's, to him I say that Brutus's love to Caesar was no less than his. If then that friend demands why Brutus rose against Caesar, this is my answer. Not that I loved Caesar less, but that I loved Rome more. Had you rather Caesar were living and die all slaves, than that Caesar was dead to live all free men? As Caesar loved me, I weep for him. As he was fortunate, I rejoice at it. As he was valiant, I honor him. But as he was ambitious, I slew him. There is tears for his love, joy for his fortune, honor for his valor, and death for his ambition. Who is here so base that would be a bondman? If any speak, for him have I offended. Who is here so rude that would not be a Roman? If any speak, for him have I offended. Who is here so vile that will not love his country? If any speak, for him have I offended. I pause for a reply. Then none have I offended. I have done no more to Caesar than you shall do to Brutus. The question of his death is enrolled in the capital. His glory not extenuated, wherein he was worthy, nor his offenses enforced, for which he suffered death. Here comes his body mourned by Mark Antony, who, though he had no hand in his death, shall receive the benefit of his dying, a place in the commonwealth, as which of you shall not? With this I depart, that as I slew my best lover for the good of Rome, I have the same dagger for myself, when it shall please my country to need my death.
Bring him with triumph unto his house.
Give him a statue with his ancestors.
We'll bring him.
My countrymen.
Good countrymen, let me depart alone. And for my sake, stay here with Antony. Do grace to Caesar's corpse and grace his speech tending to Caesar's glory, which Mark Antony, by our permission, is allowed to make. I do entreat you. Not a man depart save I alone till Antony have spoke.
Stay home, let us hear Mark Antony.
For Brutus' sake, I am beholding to you.
He says for Brutus' sake, he finds himself beholding to us all.
This Caesar was a tyrant.
Hey, that's where we are blessed Romans.
Peace, let us hear what Antony
you
has
gentle
say.
Romans!
Friends! Romans! Countrymen, lend me your ears! I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The evil that men do lives after them. The good is oft interred with their bones. So let it be with Caesar. The noble Brutus has told you Caesar was ambitious. If it was so, it was a grievous fault. And grievously hath Caesar answered it. Here under leave of Brutus and the rest, for Brutus is an honorable man. So are they all honorable men. Come I to speak at Caesar's funeral. He was my friend, faithful and just to me. But Brutus says he was ambitious. And Brutus is an honorable man. He hath brought many captives home to Rome, whose ransom did the general coffers fill. Did this in Caesar seem ambitious? When that the poor have cried, Caesar hath wept. Ambition should be made of sterner stuff
Yet Brutus says he was ambitious, and Brutus is an honorable man. You all did see that on the Lupercali thrice presented him a kingly crown, which he did thrice refuse. Was this ambition? Yet Brutus says he was ambitious, and sure he is an honorable man. I speak not to disprove what Brutus spoke, but here I am to speak what I do know. You all did love him once, not without cause. What cause withhold you then to mourn for him? Ah, judgment, thou art fled to brutish beasts, and men have lost their reason. Bear with me. My heart is in the coffin there with Caesar, and I must pause till it come back to me.
He thinks there is much reason in his saying.
If thou consider rightly of the matter, Caesar has had great wrong.
As he masters, I fear there will the worst come in his
place. If it be found so, some will dare abide it.
Poor soul, his eyes are red as fire with weeping.
There's not a nobler man in Rome than Antony.
But yesterday the word of Caesar might have stood against the world. Now lies he there, and none so poor to do him reverence. Oh, masters, if I were disposed to stir your hearts and minds to mutiny and rage, I should do Brutus wrong and Cassius wrong, who you all know are honorable men. I will not do them wrong. I rather choose to wrong the dead, to wrong myself and you, than I will wrong such honorable men. But here's a parchment with the seal of Caesar. I found it in his closet. 'Tis his will. Let but the commons hear this testament, which, pardon me, I do not mean to read. And they would go and kiss dead Caesar's wound, and dip their napkins in his sacred blood, yea, beg a hair of him for memory, and dying mention it in their wills, bequeathing it as a rich legacy unto their issue.
Well, hear the will.
Have patience, gentle friends. I must not read it. It is not fit you know how Caesar loved you. You are not wood. You are not stones, but men. And being men, hearing the will of Caesar, it will inflame you. It will make you mad. 'Tis good you know not that you are his heirs. For if you sure know what would come of it.
Hear the will, Mark Antony.
Will you have patience? Will you stay a while? I have o'ershot myself to tell you of it. I fear I wrong the honorable men whose daggers have stabbed Caesar. I do fear it.
Read the will.
You will compel me then to read the will. Then make a ring about the corpse of Caesar, and let me show you him that made the will. Shall I descend him? Will you give me leave?
No!
Stand from the hearse. Stand from the body.
Noble Antony.
If you have tears, prepare to shed them now. You all do know this mantle. I remember the first time ever Caesar put it on. Was on a summer evening in his tent, the day he overcame the Nervii. Look, in this place ran Cassius' dagger through. See what a rent the envious Casca made. Through this the well-beloved Brutus stabbed, and as he plucked his cursed steel away, mark how the blood of Caesar followed it, as rushing out of doors to be resolved if Brutus so unkindly knocked or no. For Brutus, as you know, was Caesar's angel. Giorgio, you gods, how dearly Caesar loved him. This was the most unkindest cut of all. For when the noble Caesar saw him stab, in gratitude, more strong than traitor's arms, quite vanquished him. Then burst his mighty heart. And in his mantle muffling up his face, even at the base of Pompey's statue, which all the while ran blood, great Caesar fell. Oh, what a fall was there, my countrymen.
Then I and you and all of us fell down, while bloody treason flourished over us. Oh, now you weep, and I perceive you feel the dint of pity. These are gracious drops. Kind souls, what weep you when you but behold Caesar's vesture wounded? Look you here. Here is himself, marred as you see with traitors.
Oh, piteous spectacle. Almost bloody sight.
Blood of mutiny! They that have done this deed are honorable. What private grief they have, alas, I know not that made them do it. They are wise and honorable and will, no doubt, with reasons answer you. I come not thence to steal away your hearts. I am no orator as Brutus is, but as you know me all, a plain, blunt man that love my friend, and that they know full well that gave me publicly to speak of him. For I have neither wit nor words nor worth, action nor utterance nor the power to stir men's blood. I only speak right on. I tell you that which you yourselves do know. Show you sweet Caesar's wounds. Poor, poor, dumb mouths, and bid them speak for me. But were I Brutus, and Brutus Antony, there were an Antony would ruffle up your spirits and put a tongue in every wound of Caesar that should move the stones of Rome to rise and mutiny! Why, friends, you go to you not what? Wherein has Caesar thus deserved your loves? Alas, you know not. I must tell you then, you have forgot the will I told you of. Here is the will, and under Caesar's seal, to every Roman citizen he gives, to every several man, 75 drachma. Moreover, he has left you all his walks, his private arbors and new planted orchards on this side Tiber. He has let them you and to your heirs, common pleasures to walk abroad and recreate yourselves. Here was a Caesar. When comes such another? Now let it work. Mischief, thou art afoot. Take thou the course thou wilt.
You have just heard two scenes from William Shakespeare's powerful tragedy, Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar was directed by Ellen Fletcher of the drama faculty at Carnegie Institute of Technology, and radio facilities were provided by Ray Johnson and the staff of NBC affiliate station KNED. This program was directed by Andrew C. Love. The program was a public service feature presented by NBC and its independent affiliated stations from Ashland, Oregon. This is NBC, the national broadcast.